Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 326 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we'll be discussing seven films relatively new, catching up on a couple old ones, and we're talking about trailers for three upcoming blockbuster releases, Maze Runner, Tomb Raider, and Wes Anderson's latest. First, though, a little bit of trivia. I know that it's fairly common knowledge that Michael Madsen was the first choice for John Travolta's role in Pulp Fiction. You know this, of course, right? That Tarantino had written that for Madsen.
Yes, and I think we've talked about that before maybe on the show.
I think so, yeah. Do you know who he wrote the role of Jules for originally, though? I just found this out in a Q&A that Tarantino did. I don't know if this is common knowledge or not. Fairly interesting. He wrote this specifically for Lawrence Fishburne, or as I call him, Larry Fishburne. Remember when he was Larry? Back in the day when it was cool to call him Larry?
Like, I think I saw this too, yeah.
Deep cover, yeah. So he talked about saying that he wrote it originally for Lawrence Fishburne, who wanted to accept the role, but apparently Lawrence Fishburne had just hired a team of new kind of behind-the-scenes people that were going to steer him into being a quote-unquote star or a headliner, especially after the heat he was getting from What's Love Got to Do with It, which is a fantastic performance, and Deep Cover and things like that, and they were pushing him to that. Ultimately, you know, he gets his Matrix, as Tarantino says it, but he lost out on the role. And Fishburne did want to do it, but he had paid these guys all this money, so I guess he listened to his advisors, and they, you know, advise him straight into doing things like Fled and things like that. It's such a missed opportunity because Fishburne would have been good in that role too. He'd been real good in that role, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Pulp Fiction ultimately really didn't have much value to anyone in the long run, so I don't know, but yeah.
I just think it's kind of crazy saying Jules isn't a main role. You know, he's a side character when the movie begins and ends on him. I mean, he goes through a huge transformation. That's one of the role, as far as I know. It was a Best Supporting Actor nomination for Samuel L. Jackson, but I always thought that was bullshit, that they pushed Travolta as the best actor and him in the wrong category.
Well, it's an ensemble movie, so it's hard to say anyone's the movie is really the star, right? And that storyline, the entanglement of all those characters is what really is a star. So it is an ensemble piece. I would agree. I don't know.
Yeah, but ultimately he did. And ultimately, Lawrence Fishburne was supposed to play Blade and backed out of that, and it went to Wesley Snipes. So
that's fine with me, because I don't think that would have been very good.
That to me was like, whoa, who thought of that? Your agent was pushing real hard for you on that one there, brother.
But he is great as Morpheus, so at least he got one thing right.
Absolutely. Which is a role that Will Smith passed on for Neo, you know, for the Keanu Reeves part.
Which wouldn't have been very good, I don't think.
No, so. I know. It's these near misses sometimes that make perfect movies. All right, let's get into the reviews, because we have a couple real good ones for you tonight. Let's talk off the bat about It. It's still the number one film in the country. Or, I'm sorry, it's not any longer.
Well, yeah, Kingsman barely beat it out, but good Lord.
Yeah, there's a three-way tie basically at the box office.
I keep hearing everyone say it's a must-see, it's a must-see, go see it and everything. So tell me, you saw it. Is it a must-see?
It's a good movie in parts, in spurts. It's kind of frustrating because I went with it for the first half an hour, and up to the first hour, I really thought it was great filmmaking. But that last hour becomes so routine and flat and disorganized and just redundant in a lot of ways. I didn't think that there was necessarily a jump scare, and this is a long movie. You said it could have been longer. I felt every minute of this 135-minute running time. And for the fact that there wasn't much mood or dread, I felt that the miniseries, I mean, I don't want to do too much comparison to the miniseries in the film because it's not really fair, but at least there was a sense of dread or the town being in on something possibly or knowing about this, whereas these kids are running wild. There's no real adult involvement here. I know it's a summer kids movie in a way, but to me, it's too much like Stand By Me with monsters. That could be because of the materials like that, but I thought the homage of how the one kid looked like Corey Feldman was a little much. You know what I'm saying? Like how with the glasses and the whole nine. I just thought, and really the Mike kid, you know, the black kid, it's totally shortchanged in this version. He's the one that gets them all back together later. I always thought he was the glue.
Well, he'll
be
the big one in the second one. But I agree with you, and I think that for me, I came up with a pretty decent idea to make this movie much better, and that is have Mike Hanlon be narrating it. And at the end of the movie is the beginning of the next movie where he's calling the people. You just right. end with him calling
Making
Bill,
calls.
You know,
right.
and boom, and then, you know, cut to black, you know, and that's a great way to, because this movie, I said it needs more length. Really, it only needs more length because it crams too much shit into that 2 hours.
But I want to be clear that the kids are fantastic. Much. I do like that they're not obnoxious. Yeah. They have little personalities. They're extremely
the humor works,
charismatic.
Right?
The humor works, but yeah. it's almost the humor works too much where it's disengaging from me, where I thought, oh, well, this is kind of Spielberg territory here, and I'm not really going to be scared or
it's too
haunted.
Fast, right? I mean, they don't give you enough time to breathe and to set things up and stuff, especially with the humor. It's kind of injected at times, and it takes away from the scariness of it because the kids don't seem all that afraid of it throughout a lot of the movie. But that's because I think they're not given enough time to like kind of deal with what's going on, right?
I think that there was a fatal flaw in moving this story from the 1950s to the 1980s. And I know they want the second part to be current times, but outside of a cool Batman and Lethal Weapon 2 double bill poster, which you pointed out initially, which I think is a great touch and a couple other nice production design touches, although this movie suffers extensively from you know, the video store scenario where they go into a store and everything's a Warner Brothers title because it's a Warner Brothers movie. Every poster on the wall, every movie, everything in this is Warner Brothers owned. But
Friday the not Friday, but the Freddy Krueger.
The Gremlins.
Nightmare on Elm Street was the other thing playing at the theater. Yeah, exactly.
So you saw the New Line connection, the whole nine there. So I thought that was kind of a clever thing. But outside of that, the Henry Bowers character works better as a 1950s greaser. It explains the racism a little bit more.
But
explains
it's not updated in this, is it? It just doesn't feel – it still feels like they said the 80s. But when you look at the movie, it looks like 50s, 60s.
Well, Bill's bike.
Doesn't it?
I thought they did a good job otherwise with the 1980s, but the small town.
I
mean,
it looks
like it was shot on a back.
It feels very 50s. It has that 50s kind of look to it. I don't know. The 80s to me is a little more junky, I guess. There's more shit in the 80s, you know? And this, yeah, it's a little messier, I would think. And this movie's very clean.
Well, I would say this is a near miss for me. I didn't hate the film. In fact, I found the first hour extremely enjoyable. I just got increasingly frustrated. But yeah, a big letdown, especially.
It's not scary, right? Especially the end when they went into the sewers. Was that just not scary at all? That should have been the scariest part.
It didn't do anything for me.
No, it wasn't scary. I mean, when they get right up to Pennywise and he's doing his shtick and stuff and they're fighting him, it just felt like there was no danger, you know, they couldn't possibly be killed because he just seemed so incapable.
Let's move on and talk about another film currently out there, just hitting the home video market. I think one of the year's best films, superhero film or not, Spider-Man Homecoming. You just caught up with this. What'd you think?
Yes. I feel a little bad saying this, but I wasn't horribly impressed with this. I don't really understand why this is so loved. To me, it's very basic. It's not, it's almost a one-off. It's very episodic. And they go through the same old tropes, you know, over and over again with these Spider-Man movies. And it's just like, why can't we do something a little interesting? I guess I'd put it like this. This movie is so safe in everything that it does. It just feels very cookie cutter. It feels very constructed and very deliberately out not to accomplish anything, you know, not to try or do anything.
It, though it's supposed to be innocuous and harmless
and boring, then, you know, to a bit of a degree. The acting's fantastic. The kid's a great Spider-Man, although at this point, isn't that just who's not a good Spider-Man? I'm not sure. Michael Keaton's great in it. I love that they finally started to have a storyline in here with the alien tech and these guys using bad. They did a short film after the first Avengers that dealt with that too, and I thought that's a great idea. I wonder if they'll ever use that in a movie.
After.
So it's,
this is the cleanup from that. Remember, you know, the Stark Tower. That's how it starts. The opening prologue there is all, you know, directly after Stark towers is destroyed and they find that alien tech. And that's why I thought it was so clever, because they were playing from the first Avengers,
right? This is from, because this is after Civil War.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It is.
So, but I mean, you're right. There's still the prologue alien tech
was
there,
after the first Avengers, and then the rest of the story took place after Civil War.
No, I can't remember. No, because it was, well, I don't know.
You saw, okay, well, let me ask you, you saw the plot twist coming here? I mean, you said it was rudimentarily written. You saw it was...
I feared it, and then when it happened, I thought, oh, shit, really? Really?
I had no clue. You caught me.
Because what Spider-Man movie do they not do this shit in? It's always, like, so, he's always a guy that's so close to him, and then he always finds out, and then it's always, like, it's okay somehow. It's just, like...
Well, that's the Spider-Man deal. God. They always have reluctant villains. A villain who's not truly a bad guy. I get that, way
but
by circumstance.
I don't want to see it in every movie. It's in every fucking thing. It's just the same thing over and over again. Like,
you didn't
throw
think
me
scene,
something new.
You didn't think the scene where they both realized who each other were in the car. On
great
the
scene.
That's a killer
and the
scene.
The only redeeming moment of that whole... But when he answers the door, my heart dropped. I was like, oh, shit, really? They did it. You know, yeah, and the great scene. Like I said, the acting's great. The writing's very good. The movie's good. It's not a bad movie. It's just not a great movie. Everyone's trying to sell me on this as a great movie, and it's just not. It's
so you're stacking,
just there.
You're stacking Guardians of the Galaxy above this?
Oh, for sure. This does not move Spider-Man forward, right? Let's just say that. At the end of the movie, he has to make a choice, and that choice both results in him being Spider-Man. So it's like... It's just such a small, small movie. It just doesn't really move the narrative forward. You know, it doesn't do anything. I hope that the next movie is that. But I really think that pulling him into this Marvel universe really made Spider-Man less significant.
I would say that he is a more minor character. He almost feels like a secondary character in the whole universe, even in this movie. But I really liked how innocent he was and how ho-hum he was. And probably my favorite Spider-Man, although they've all been good to a degree so far. But let me ask you about Transformers The Last Night, a film which I think is the worst of the year, or amongst the worst of the year. And I like the other ones. I actually defend I've seen Age of Extinction more times than I should, but you got a chance to catch up with this. What's going on with part 5? What do you feel?
Age of Extinction is terrible, and so is this. This is easily the worst one of the bunch.
Out of all of them, right?
With Age of Extinction being a very close second. It's just bad. Like, there's just no rhyme or reason to it. It's insane. I have to think to some degree that Michael Bay understands this to such a degree that he no longer is able to tell you know, these stories, because he probably knows what the fuck is going on in this. He knows, like, who people are and shit. I don't know who the fuck these people are. I don't know any of this shit and all this history and stuff, blah blah blah. God, and the Wiccans, it's so fucking terrible.
I mean, this movie, that there was a writer's room assembled and that they took two scripts and melded them, the two best ideas. Does it not seem like that? I mean, are characters in plot three?
It seems like Michael Bay doesn't even care anymore. I mean, to such a huge degree that this movie is just, wow. Like, I thought that about the last Transformers movie. He phoned that in. But this is really, really phoned in. He's just not even attempting to try anymore.
Which is unfortunate, because these are massive undertakings that take so much time out of a director's career.
Well,
and I'm such a fan
them.
Of the guy. I wish he was doing other things, even other franchises. At this point, move on. There is nothing else. Even Wahlberg is rendered absolutely useless here. Why is Anthony Hopkins, who has one great sequence in there, I thought, with the robot and like a kind of fun thing where he's walking him through the castle area and stuff, and then later he's killed. They don't tell you why he's standing where he's standing, where he takes the explosion that kills him. It makes things are happening
well,
in
he
this
gets
movie.
Shot. I mean,
but why he? I swear
Megatron
to you,
shoots him.
I thought he just appeared, though. Like, where was he earlier in that sequence? Was
he was standing right there. He was standing there the whole time, right behind Stonehenge.
Okay, well, maybe you were
prepared.
Remember?
And then he shot Megatron, and then everybody else started shooting him. And then
Megatron
saw him, and then he shot him.
You were engaged in the storyline with the little girl, the tough little 12-year-old girl who they shoot like an 18-year-old Victoria's Secret model, which made me super uncomfortable to watch.
No, I was really upset that was so terrible, because that looked like it could be potentially a good storyline. There's no humanity in this movie. In this movie, right? There's just
not made by humans.
There's
yeah.
no moment where you connect in any like emotional way or. Even in a way that this is so cool. You don't even connect to it in that sense. So it's just bad all around.
Overly complicated and uninvolving is kind of how I felt.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Little Evil, Netflix's premiere film with what's his face there? Adam Scott,
yep.
And
Evangeline Lilly.
What's going on? Is this a comedy, basically a version of The Omen?
You may be tempted to think that. but no, it's not. I don't know how to explain this. It's kind of is. It starts off that way and it really wants you to believe that's what it is. But it turns into just a straight comedy thing where he's just trying to connect with a kid in some. I don't know how to explain. It's not a good movie. It should not be surprising since it is a Netflix original or deemed as such. But it's not good, man.
You know, it's
not funny.
Originals.
It's not scary.
These things used to have like kind of a stamp of quality, I felt like, when they were first coming out. Mm-hmm. And now they're throwing things at the wall so frequently. It's not like HBO Films, which has this prestige.
No,
about
they're just
them.
Looking for content and trying to get like what they can. I mean, I do like this director, Eli Craig. He's done Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which is really good, a horror comedy. If you're interested in seeing something good. But this is not. It is confused as to what it is, tries to get too cutesy, and really just, I don't know, there's just no value in it, you know? Like, it's just a very weak movie.
All right, well, let's talk about American Assassin briefly here. This is the film that tries to present Dylan O'Brien as the next Tom Cruise, and I gotta be honest, I actually like this kid as that kind of screen hero. Not a bad little movie, but extremely inconsequential. You've seen all of this done before in different movies in different ways. I kept thinking of the low-key Luc Besson films, kind of like 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask, because it kind of looked like, you know, as far as spy movies like that go, is it just like kind of low-key, senseless action in a sense, and not senseless in a good way, but just kind of like stuff's happening on screen, just take up time?
No, it actually moves fairly well. Yeah. It's extremely well constructed and directed by Michael Cuesta, who did the overlooked and underrated Kill the Messenger, a true story about a San Jose Mercury newspaper writer who uncovers a conspiracy and is killed, starring Jeremy Renner, came out a couple years ago. That's a fantastic movie. This is Bourne Identity Light, or you know, one of those kind of things. But I'll tell you this, I actually enjoyed it more than I did the last Jack Reacher film. So as a secondary kind of B-movie level action hero, I wouldn't mind the guy. The kid, I think, has charisma. Michael Keaton, you know, it's becoming unnecessary to say how good he is in everything he's doing, but he's really great as the hard-ass sniper here, the drill instructor who's trying to teach this guy to be a sniper and a killer and all these kind of things. But it really is a ripoff of The Hunted, of these other movies you've seen before, especially if you've watched this genre throughout the years. It's not insultingly bad. It's just not original enough to really recommend it, but I like it. And if you know what you're getting when you go into it, it's well made of its type. So I guess that's the best way I could describe that. Let's talk about The House real quick. Have you seen The House?
I have not.
I'm interested in what you say, because The House tanked this summer, right?
Yeah, Will Ferrell, pretty hard.
And just recently, that Chance the Rapper, I don't know if you follow the rap game still. Are you big into the hip-hop culture there?
No.
I figured you are. No? Surprise me there, sir. And this rapper recently just over the weekend tweeted that he had never heard of this movie, and it was great, and that critics and Rotten Tomatoes didn't know shit, and blah, blah, blah. And this is a case where I kind of agree with him, because this movie was hammered when it came out. It made no money. It starts off in the first – it's only 90 minutes long, but the first 10 minutes are so bad that I thought this has got to be worst of the year material. It's so painfully staged and unfunny that you just I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But it genuinely builds momentum and it produces a few big laughs. And it's probably the best gross-out scene of the year is contained in this movie. It's actually a bit of a – kind of homage to Scorsese's Casino in a lot of ways. So I dug that. I dig the cast. I like the people. I'm giving this one a pass. I recommend this one. When you see it, we're going to visit this again, because I think that you're going to fucking hate this movie.
Really?
I, for whatever reason, I think that you would hate it. But there was a few times. It's not the best work from Ferrell and Poehler, but it's damn funny in parts. All right, what about Assassin's Creed? Can we get a minute here for Assassin's Creed?
What?
Got a minute to talk about Assassin's Creed?
I guess.
All right. We got a little issue about Assassin's Creed. The Michael Fassbender film that came out over the Christmas time period now is hitting HBO Go. I watched it last week. You watched it last week. You texted me and said, this is worse than Timeline?
Yeah. And it is.
I'd say no.
Timeline is more of a real movie than this. Yes. Oh, please. You're gonna tell me that this is a good movie just because you like the way it looked.
Not only because of the way it looked. Okay, hold on. It has a beautiful visual quality to it. I thought the acting was way above par for this kind of thing. I thought that the story,
it's not.
For what it, I've never played this video game a day in my life, so I don't know if this is the original story or not, but the story was...
I mean, that's how the video game is.
It's a stupid
story. It's a terrible story, man. And the video game, I still don't think the video game made any sense. This movie, to me, makes even less sense. All they're trying to do is get some stupid fucking Apple thing, right? This is the MacGuffin that they're after. It really has fucking no value to anybody because they don't even do shit with it. They're after that the whole time. The fucking movie is like you're watching a guy play like a virtual reality video game. That's the fucking movie. It's like, and he's not even doing anything. It takes forever for them to uncover anything. If they have this technology, why is it so hard for them to figure out where the fucking Apple is?
This movie, I'm not saying it stands up to any sort of scrutiny when you think about it.
It's a terrible movie.
But in the moment, it works from moment to moment. It kept my attention. I think it's head and shoulders above Warcraft. Head and shoulders.
Yeah, but again, I mean, okay, Timeline, Warcraft. So this is in a fantastic crowd here, what we're comparing it to, right? I mean,
I didn't say it was amongst distinguished company.
What are you trying to prove here?
I'm just saying that this, as far as video games to film translations go, is particularly in recent year, this is one of the better ones.
No.
Well, I thought the guy's last production, I mean, Fassbender, this Marion Cotillard, and Irons, and the director all teamed together with this guy from 2015. They did Macbeth together, which is a really beautiful version as well, which I'm sure got the guy this job because the director of Assassin's Creed. Great movie. Check that out.
Now he's screwed.
Yeah, I don't know what to go with that because a sequel will never come. So now you have this movie that most likely will just be rebooted in a couple of years anyways.
Yeah. Well, no, probably not.
Aeon Flux. It reminded me of that in some ways.
That, too. Prince of Persia. I mean, it's pretty much all the shit that's just bad. It just falls back on visual style, really, to do it. You know, instead of it just has these stupid fucking storylines because video games are fucking dumb, you know, which is fine because you're playing them. You're not sitting there passively being told a story. You're living it.
I thought it was as visually compelling, but as dumb. Mm-hmm. As a movie that came out years ago, a horror movie came out on a video game called Silent Hill. Do you recall that one?
Yeah.
Beautiful to look at, overlong, dumb as a box of rocks, but I thought that movie was engaging too. So.
I mean, that movie, I think, was much better than this just because it had that horror aspect to it, which you can get away with not really having a story, you know? But this just didn't have a story.
I put this in the level of the Resident Evil movies.
Good Lord. Oh, God, not even close. Resident Evil way better than this.
All right, well, let's move on to the Trailer Addict portion of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, a couple of trailers here. We're talking about video game movies. Let's talk a little Tomb Raider.
This is the reboot, right? The reboot and What is this movie? I can't tell if it's brilliant or a bomb. What's
I know.
Yeah,
good. I'm glad you said that, too. I don't like that they go to an island. And I don't like that she meets the guy who then touches her face and goes, oh, and I get it now. Such a beautiful daughter. I was fighting your father earlier. Now you're here to fight me and stop shit that I'm doing on this remote island. It's like, what the hell? But then the action looks great.
This is either going to be such a folly along the lines of Uwe Boll's films, or yeah, it's going to be a masterpiece like Dread. I can't tell which one, but it's going to be one of the either. It's not going to be in the middle. I can tell you that.
You don't think it's going to be in the middle?
I don't think it could be
in the middle. Yeah,
it looks
not
too
with
stylized.
That storyline and with the action. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell because with a movie like that, and then unless you're in it, you can't just see a couple of frames here and there and say that it's going to be good or bad, right? I mean, it's kind of like any movie like this. God, what was the Mark Wahlberg video game one that they made that was terrible?
Max Payne,
yeah. Which looks fantastic as a trailer, really, if you take those moments out of it, but it's a fucking terrible movie. And the action scenes in that are fucking horrendous, yeah. So this could be just an all-out terrible fucking movie.
But it could be.
She looks
brilliant.
Good, though. She looks good as Laura Croft.
Although I'm
going to
say,
like
Jolie is the original and the best.
Yes, and she's still – and Jolie, yeah. I mean, I agree with you on that one. But she still looks good as Laura Croft. She looks like Laura Croft. I'm like, all right, I buy that.
A bit waifish for me, but I'll take it.
You've seen Laura Croft, right?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, she has no muscles.
Let's move on to talk about Maze Runner 3, which is the continuation of the trilogy that was set up back in 2014. Had a long delay between the second and third one for star Dylan O'Brien to recover from a terrible onset injury that caused him to suffer major facial reconstruction and surgery and all that kind of stuff. It looks like they're hiding a lot in this teaser, really, because it's the franchise building. This is what's come before, and now you get this. And don't you want to know? Not much really to talk about here. I really liked the first Maze Runner. The second one, not so much. I don't know what I'm getting here, and I don't know if I'm into it after all this time. His injury really delayed this so long, a year and a half, that I hate to say that because I like the actor and I like the franchise, but I think the heat's gone from this. I mean, we've moved so far away from this kind of stuff, away from the Divergent stuff and all those wannabes that were coming out, like The Host and Beautiful Creatures and any young adult novel
stuff.
Yeah,
you'd have to think that definitely hurts this, because I agree with you on that. I'm still wanting to see the end of this. I didn't mind the second one, but again, it was such a departure from the first that it's just like, this is not what I signed up for. You know, this is something totally, now we're just cheesy teen, you know, whatever. Basically a Hunger Games ripoff, you know, just same old, same old. So yeah, and this looks like more of the second one. But still, I like to see it to the end, you know, I've seen it this far, but yeah.
I thought the first one was like a lost episode, a good lost episode that got.
Yeah, that it was good. It was interesting. And it was something that made you want to learn about the maze and stuff, right? But now they're not in the fucking maze.
Yeah, so why are we still calling it Maze Runner? I'm not really sure. Now let's talk about Wes Anderson's latest. This is the animated film Isle of Dogs, a futuristic animated film for adults featuring dogs. Why do I want to see this so bad? It looks it looks brilliant, honestly. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, this looks like this just looks just good. I don't know. It's exciting at times. It is. I think the animation on the dogs is mesmerizing. You know,
the voice cast. Edward Norton.
The voice is all fantastic. Yeah, well, it's Wes Anderson. So it's all the same group.
It's his role players.
And they're all great actors. But it's just, it looks like it has action, it has heart. I really like the way the dogs look in this. And I like the way that they talk. It's weird to say that, but you don't see a lot of stop motion animation. And it's rare to see some that actually looks good, or at least has a good story to it, I should say. Most of it's fairly boring.
Well, even the latest Pixar release, Coco or something along those lines, looks like The Book of the Dead. Book of Life that came out a few years ago, and things like it's starting to all kind of resemble each other. This has an extremely distinctive look, and is the story has a little. I love that the guy's name's Atari Kobayashi, and things. You know, there's little nods here to pop culture, to other movies, to things going on within just the peripherals of what you're looking at. And I want to see this. I think this is going to be a talked about movie. But then again, I thought last year Charlie Kaufman's animated film, the stop motion one with the puppets, the marionette puppets, I guess.
I don't think I even saw that.
I can't recall the name of it right now. I want to say it's on.
I remember something like that, but.
We watched the trailer on this episode, on this show, but it's on Amazon right now. I cannot recall the name of it at the moment, but regardless, it looks something along the lines of that. And I wonder if this is going to be up for not only best animated best picture,
the Fantastic Mr. Fox and stuff, which is essentially the same thing as this, or animation wise.
We talked last week a little bit about Darren Aronofsky, and I told you I really don't care for him outside of maybe Requiem and some here and there.
But now you love him?
Animalisa is the one from last year, by the way.
Yeah,
that was the one from 2015. Technically, it came out. But I think that Wes Anderson is a filmmaker who initially started out, I thought, I didn't like Bottle Rocket. I really didn't like Rushmore. But his filmography continues to grow on me, with the exception of a Steve Zissou.
Yeah, right. That one I didn't like so much. I really didn't like Fantastic Mr. Fox all that much.
I love The Budapest, though.
Really good, yeah.
I was extremely impressed by that. And obviously The Royal Tenenbaums and any of the good ones in his filmography. But more often than not, I'm willing to go down the strange rabbit hole that this guy takes me.
Yeah, you do like to go down a lot of holes, so.
That's true. I'm a hole seeker. Before we get ourselves in the hole, we actually got a short show for you guys tonight. It's going to wrap up episode 326. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard. We want to thank you guys for joining us on this great podcast. Look for our back podcast on TalkShoe and MovieMavericks.com. We are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com/warp9. Engage!